Welcome to another episode of the Home Seeker Podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and today it's a bit different. We're joined by Ray. He's one of our property specialists at Mortgage HQ, as well as a Wealth HQ client. Today, we're going to dive into how Ray found his very first property in the regions at 25 years old, and then how Ray managed to purchase a property with his partner in Auckland at 27. Over and above this, we're also going to talk about the risk mitigation factors that Ray and I both spoke to each other about and how this early decision led him to being paid a claim through his insurance. Welcome, Ray, to the podcast.
Thank you, Andy. Happy to be here.
Let's talk about your story, Ray. You purchased your first investment at 25 and then your owner-occupied a little bit later with your partner at 27 years old. Now, this isn't the typical approach we see most people taking. You've gone for investment before you went owner-occupied. Talk to me about why you went investment before owner-occupied.
Awesome. So I was in a very fortunate position, as a lot of people may be aware, that people in Asian cultures, they tend to, well, their parents are happy for them to live with them for an extended amount of time, even beyond 18, beyond uni. And I was in a very fortunate situation where my parents were happy to support me in the sense of providing me accommodation. And as a result of that, I was able to save up a bit more money. And I lived fairly close to where I worked. And as a result of that, there wasn't a huge need for me to buy my first home. And yeah, because of that, why not look into the investment route? Because that's what Mortgage HQ was about. And yeah, that was my decision.
So you kind of went investment property, you know, you bought in the regions, right? Down in Timaru. So you went for cash flow, right?
That's correct.
Cash flow, why? What was it that made you go for a cash flow opposed to capital gains? Was it just due to your deposit you might have had at the time, the purchase price? Like, what enticed you to go towards a property in Timaru? And I bet you've probably never seen the property in person either. So what made you decide to go that way?
So you're right. Yep, I've never seen the property. But to be frank, investing is all about the numbers, and a lot of the risk can be mitigated without being there in person. So yeah, I decided to buy in Timaru. One of the things I was restricted by at the time was my deposit. As you know, any property purchase, we need a deposit. With an investment property as compared to a first home, the deposit requirement is actually higher. So I was restricted by the amount of money I had that time, and there was only a limited amount of cities that I could have invested in. And Timaru was the one that I ultimately selected due to the rental return. When comparing opportunities, well, we actually discovered that through QV.co.nz from past statistics that the capital increases across New Zealand are actually very similar. And that's quite surprising, because I, like a lot of other people, would have expected Auckland, Wellington, Tauranga, those main centers to have more. And through my research, well, I actually discovered that regional properties actually still appreciate very well.
Yeah, it's interesting, because that's something that a lot of people do think, that if you're Auckland, as you said, main center, that the property is going to go up more in value or quicker than a regional property. But as you said, we find that's not the case. The slight difference would be that if it goes up by 5% on a $1 million property, it's more than 5% on a 250 or 300K purchase, right? Your equity growth is there, but obviously serviceability and deposit requirements come into that. But your property in which you did purchase, did you look at future potential? Was it a development opportunity? Was it a home and income? Was it big land? Like, what was it that made you pick this particular property?
So at the time of purchasing the property, one of the main attractions was the rent covered the mortgage. I was very fortunate that I purchased when rates were 2%. And the second opportunity that was really attractive was that the house was 100 square meters big and it sat on 800 square meters of land. With that amount of land, there's lots of things that we can do. We can subdivide, chop it off, sell the piece of land. We can add one, maybe even two dwellings or cabins on the property. So that was always, yeah, something that I could have explored.
Because I know the rental market down, you know, in the regions there's a lot of demand, right? So adding or looking at values where you can put on a cabin or, okay, another property and subdividing and selling is a really easy way to get your cash investment back and also create value in the property and allow you to do more, right? Now, did you find the house just on TradeMe? Did you have a property dealer, a property finder? How did you come across it?
Yeah, I found the property on TradeMe at the time. It was just simply because I knew what I was looking for. And that's really important for anyone who's looking to buy, is having good search parameters, right? Knowing your budget, knowing what type of house you want, not just a three bedroom. You know, you want to know more precisely what opportunities you're looking for.
Yeah, it's extremely important, right? And I think now when even back then, a lot of New Zealanders were really into property investing. And now TradeMe isn't necessarily the only way in which you can find property. And sometimes very difficult, right? Property finders make things a lot easier, but they come with the cost. But as you said, you were in a position where you could act quite quickly. If you found something, you could go for it straight away and not have to keep looking and looking and looking and going in and open homes. And
yeah,
kind of removed all of that, right? Which is important when you said investment comes all down to the numbers.
That's correct.
You don't have to see it, right? You don't have to go down, but you would have done your DD, your due diligence.
Of course, yeah.
Reports, stuff like that.
Yeah, so it's really cool because when you're investing in property or even buying a home, a lot of risks with property, you can actually break it down into numbers. And well, what are the main risks? Well, there's a building being the quality of the building not being good. And if you think about it, well, am I going to see those issues or is a registered builder going to see those issues? And the answer is quite clear to me that a builder is going to have more expertise than myself. And that's the same thing with a lot of the risks in a property decision, is that there are professionals that can help you out. And, you know, why not let the professionals do what they're good at?
Yeah. Exactly. We're not lawyers, we're not solicitors, accountants, or builders for that matter. So, yeah, look, those are the few things I think a lot of people need to understand is if you do your DD, you don't need to go and see the property in person. But one thing that you just brought up earlier, something I really want to touch on, is the capital gains in the regions versus main centers. So I've done, hope you don't mind, I've done some numbers on your owner-occupied and your investment property. Now, your investment property from your purchase to now has gone up 17.2% in value. Right, so that's 5.7% growth year on year. Your Auckland property is 13.43%, right? 6.7 year on year. Obviously, you've owned your investment property for 1 year longer than your Auckland property. So what we can see is there's actually a 1% difference between the capital gains in regions and in Auckland, you know, a major center, which is fascinating to see because it goes against the grain of everything that people talk about outside of obviously this industry and us. But I want to understand, I guess, three things, common questions that we always get. I'm going to break them down and I want you to answer them one by one. I want to understand, one, the benefits of cash flow. Two, the benefits of equity growth. And three, the benefits of having a diverse portfolio. So let's start at the benefits of cash flow.
Yeah. So just like the name suggests, the benefit of cash flow is that the rental income in comparison to your mortgage repayments are significantly higher. And the primary benefit, well, it puts less pressure on you, especially for a young boy like myself. When I decided to buy an investment property, I also had many other interests and still do. And a lot of families fall in the same categories. They have, you know, they've got families to take care of, children to look after, and those and holidays that they have to go to, and those all require money, right? So naturally, buying a cash flow property would put less burden on your personal income and help you out in that sense.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but if you do have a really good positive cash flow property, right, like 7, 8, 9, 10% plus, after all the expenses are taken care of, you're going to be left with some ideally cash flow, right? So let's just say that's $500 a week, right? You've got a really good property, you're earning $500 a week from it. Now that cash flow can also go towards servicing a new mortgage as well, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So that's another benefit, is that it actually allows you to potentially purchase more properties opposed to getting stuck, because you can utilize that cash flow elsewhere to help service a mortgage.
Exactly.
Yeah. So another really good benefit of cash flow. Now, equity is something a lot of people chase. In a lot of instances, we don't have control over if our property grows or not, because economic factors kind of increase that and make changes, right? Now, yeah. You could go onto a property, buy into value, renovate, do all of that. Now, that is the best way, excluding the market, or both of those ways together, is to help build the value of a property, right? So if we remove the renovations aspect of it, you know, buying an equity growth property, something that you understand will keep going up and up in value, what are some of the benefits of doing that? So three things I want to cover, and I want you to answer them individually, right? So I'm going to run through them right now. First one is the benefits of a cash flow positive property, okay? Mm-hmm. The second one is I want to understand the benefits of an equity property, a property which should appreciate faster, and how it's important having one of those in your portfolio. And the last one is like a diverse portfolio. What are the benefits of that? So let's talk about the benefits of a cash flow positive property.
The main reason people want to buy cash flow properties is, just like the name suggests, it puts less pressure on you having to pay off the mortgage and service the repayments with your own income. So many people, at the time of buying my investment property, I was a young bloke with a lot of other priorities that need money. And that's the same case for a lot of families as well. You've got kids to look after, you've got families, you've got, you know, traveling. There's a lot of things that need money in life. And buying a cash flow property, put simply, allows you to invest and puts less pressure on your day-to-day living.
Yeah, so when you say it allows you to invest, what you're talking about is that after all the bills are gone, all the taxes paid, you're still left with each month, you're in the positive, right? So now that money you can take and reinvest to help service another property, right? So if I'm getting $500 a week, look, after everything, it'd be very nice to be getting that. But
yeah, very nice.
If that was the case, I could then take that $500 a week, put it against or use it as serviceability, buy another property that's going to help me be able to achieve my goals, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Now, benefits of equity growth. So we have talked about the difference between major centers and also regional not actually being that different when we look at it. But let's be honest, an Auckland property is going to be 900 plus or 800 plus, yeah, right? So 10% growth on that's greater than it is on 350,000. So how important is it to have a property like that, whether it be, you know, Tauranga, Christchurch, Wellington, Auckland, a major centre?
Yeah.
How important is it to have one of those in your portfolio?
Well, it's very important to have one of those properties because, as the name suggests, an equity property appreciates in value, hopefully, very quickly. And what it allows you to do is allows you to use the equity in that property to buy your second or your third quicker. So usually when people buy in the major centers, the expectation is that, well, the value is going to grow to a level where you can borrow the additional equity and use that as a deposit. And why? Well, the reason that becomes really important is the equity, the rate at which your property value appreciates is very often, for 99% of people, faster than you can save, right? So in order to get the property afterwards, you're going to need that equity property so that you have that deposit appreciation waiting to be used.
Yeah, and I guess it also compounds, right? So if my house is worth $1 million right now and I'm getting 5% right now, it's 50K, yeah, right? But next year it might be worth 1.1 million. All of a sudden, the compounding effects start to come into it. And, you know, in this day and age with expenses where they are, it's very difficult to be able to save $50,000,
$60,000
and pay for everything else, right? Now, what we've just talked about is having a cash flow positive property to allow, you know, greater opportunity in the future. And also so you don't have to technically pay for it. You're also helping rental markets. The other aspect is an appreciating asset in a major center, which should, you know, over time appreciate at a faster rate. Now, having both of those creates a bit more of a diverse portfolio.
Yeah.
Right. Important, do you think?
Absolutely. So if you just have cash flow properties and that they don't appreciate as quickly, what's going to happen is you're going to save up your deposit every time. And with properties, you're talking about things in the 6-7 figures, and it's going to be very hard to save up that 20 to 35% deposit. Well, what happens if you just have equity properties? If you just have your income to take service of debt, eventually you're going to face too much pressure with the repayments. You're going to tap out eventually.
Yeah.
So it's... Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. The stuck is a word we use use around here. But that's why it becomes really important to have a balanced portfolio so that, well, first you need to understand your situation by speaking with someone from our team that doesn't have from us or any financial advisor, and knowing what type of property decisions is going to supplement your current position. That's really important.
So we've got your Timaru property. Now we've also got your Auckland property that we haven't really talked about too much. But I want to understand, when you were searching for an owner-occupied property with your partner, was there any particular type of property that you were really, really searching for?
Yeah. So we were specifically looking for what's called a home and income property. And that's a really cool thing because a lot of families could use this, could search for one as well. Because what it does, well, I'm sure we've all met the problem of, well, live in somewhere but we don't have the budget to go in that area. And the great thing about home and income properties is that because of the income aspect of that property, it allows you to increase your budget and maybe get into that school zone you want, get into that suburb that you want to live
in. Yeah, and a home and income doesn't necessarily mean someone having to live underneath you, right? It can also be a separate dwelling on the same land. But we ran the numbers on your particular property. We don't need to dive into it, but tell us how much more servicing your income on that home and income gave you to purchase this property.
So myself and my partner, we don't have a family just yet, so it's just us. We can live a little less lavishly. So what we did was we actually lived in the smaller part, the income what most families would use as the income part. And we rented out the bigger area, right? And that allowed us to increase our budget by around 350,000. And that was really awesome because we are now, you know, I'm still living close to work and we're still local and where we grew up.
That's a massive number, $350,000 just by somebody else living in the property. Well, not in your property, but
sharing the same part of the land.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And that's crazy because what you're saying is that, for example, if you bought your property for, let's just say, 1.35 million, right? That means that on your own, you could only service $1 million. But now you've got this other person paying your mortgage,
yeah,
or a big part of your mortgage, you can now lend a further $350,000. Getting you into the market. And you've already, because of that, you've already seen a, you know, what was it, 13, 14% increase, yeah, in the value over a 12-month period, which is, well, 18-month period. Yeah. That's crazy, right? And it's relatively low maintenance too, right? It's brick and tile.
Yeah.
Being that, it could easily be a good rental down the line for capital gains. But what is your long-term goal with this particular property, your Auckland base? Is it hold or is it to take the equity out through selling it and then to reinvest? What's your goal?
Yeah. So, before buying the property, it was very important to understand, to get on the same page as your partner / your family. Like, what are the plans of that property? A lot of first home buyers, they wait for something they fall in love with. When in reality, as you grow, as your family grows, a lot of the times the first property you buy isn't going to be your forever home. So it's very important to use a bit of investing sense into your first property purchase, even if it's a home, right? So for us, our plan was to hold it for the medium term, around 3 to 5 years, and sell the property and reinvest the capital that was originally put in there, along with hopefully a good chunk of capital gain, into further investment properties.
And because it's your own occupied, right, there isn't going to be any capital gains tax. You don't have to abide by any bright line test, anything like that, right?
That's correct. As long as you live in the property over half of the time.
If, for example, if I've had a property for 5 years and I rent it out, just because it's now rented, it doesn't mean that I now abide by the new...
I believe you should seek an accountant advice on this, yeah, but I believe every year you have to be there for over 183 days. If you lived in it for 3 years, rented it out for 2, you have to pay tax. It's only if you live in there for half the time, move out, move back in. I believe that's how the wording is.
Okay, well, we might just not try. This is not financial advice.
Yeah.
So look, we're going to move on now, Ray, from the property side of things, because this is really what I want to dive into. Something that we don't talk about nearly enough on our podcast and something that we're going to talking about a lot more moving forward. So when you went through the process, obviously you purchased with a mortgage HQ advisor. Probably Blandon would have done the
one of the older advisors who's now left now.
One of the older advisors, yeah. Fine. So you went through the process. Now you and I at that point in time, we discussed risk mitigation, or in other words, you know, insurance.
Yeah.
A lot of people in their 30s, let alone their 20s, they don't have the mindset that they need it. They just think 10-foot-tall, bulletproof. And they don't need anything because they're young and healthy. Now, in your words, can you please tell me, like, what motivated you for the conversation between you and I, and why you went down the route of protecting yourself?
Just like some of those people that you mentioned also, you know, didn't think it was, not that I didn't think, it's just I didn't think it was important for me to, you know, dive into the importance of insurance at that point in time. When I bought my first property, I thought the mortgage was low, I was young, and that kind of view sort of changed gradually as I worked longer and longer in this industry. I've seen, you know, more and more people come to me with financial struggles that could have been easily mitigated had they protected themselves. And over time, that kind of changed my view. And by the time I purchased my second property, which is a home with my partner, now that I have a family that, or I could be growing a family, as well as picking up a larger debt, the insurance conversation became very, very important to me.
Yeah. Now, we're talking predominantly about not home insurance, not contents, not vehicles. Yeah. We're talking about insuring yourself, right? Yeah. So here's a question for you. You now have a large chunk of debt that you share with your partner. Your income side of things. If your income dropped away, let's just pretend it wasn't here,
yeah,
as of today, how would that affect your ability to repay your mortgage, you know, all of that, your expenses, your cost of living?
Well, to put simply, I couldn't. And I'm assuming that would be the same for a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
And that's why it becomes really important, because like, you don't want to be put in a position where the bank is selling your house on your behalf, because you want to sell, you want to liquid, you want to control your assets. You work so hard to put down that deposit. You work so hard to get to that second, that third property. You want to make sure that it's in your control and you're always protecting your ability to make a decision on your assets.
And I think for you, being a person who has invested and has this like investment mindset, that you have this end goal that you've already talked about. You sell your property, buy more properties, right? But there's one thing driving it, which is evidently your income. And I think probably because you start to be in this industry a little bit more, you start to see what goes on. And now you understand that, man, I can't actually achieve that if my income disappears, right? Yeah. Now, yes, you are only, you know, in your late 20s, still really young, still healthy. But the good thing is, in this regard, is that we are very lucky that we went down the route a year ago, right? Because about 3 to 4 months ago, actually 5 months ago now, we had to call upon your insurance, right? And ultimately, you got a claim paid out. So can you talk to me about the events that actually led up making a claim and what exactly happened?
When Andy went through my insurance options with me, he recommended a product to me that protected me in case of injury. So Andy was my advisor and he was very knowledgeable and he recommended me to get, what was it called?
It's called accidental injury alongside your income protection.
Yeah, accidental injury. So being a young guy, I do like to stay active. I play a lot of sport. And naturally, with sport, there's going to be injuries. And accidental injury was something that Andy recommended to me. And I actually had to make a claim on that. So about middle of last year, I signed up to a 20-week mixed martial arts course, which ended in a mixed martial arts fight. And during the fight, which I won, by the way, I actually suffered a broken bone in my wrist. I forgot the actual name, but it was a specific medical term. So I broke my wrist and I couldn't twist or move it. And I had to be put in a splint afterwards. And, you know, it didn't occur to me at the time, but a couple of days later when I went to the office, Andy saw me in this and he reminded me, mate, we need to make a claim for you.
Yeah, I remember that. And it's one of those things that a lot of the young people I speak to, I make sure that they do have it, right? Because even though you are desk bound, right, you think easy, you break your leg or particularly your wrist where you are right now. What we forget is that we actually use our hands, our wrists every single day when we are seeing people and talking to people, but we still have a lot of requirements when it comes to our emails, you know, our recommendations, all of that. So how difficult did it actually, even though you are deskbound, how difficult did it make your job?
Yeah, it was very hard. Although I could still speak, I could still type, I could still do everything as I would normally, except at about 30% of the speed. So because my wrist was bound, I couldn't move my mouse properly. I couldn't type with one hand. Everything just slowed down. And it's something that I didn't even know like how important having a wrist is until then.
Yeah, it's interesting because your workload would obviously drop. And when workload drops, particularly in an industry like we're in, you know, opportunity also drops. You can't help as many people because you can't work at the same speed that you like to work at, right? And that's just work we're talking about. We're obviously not sure if your partner does do all the cooking at home anyway, but, you know, you can't do things like that. You can't pick up pans. You can't pick up pots. You know, Everything is a lot more difficult.
So can't vacuum. No. Clean the house.
Can't do anything. It sounds like a dream.
It might sound a bit weird, but can't even clean yourself properly, you know?
Yeah.
Basic things.
It's just one of those things I think for young people is one thing I always talk about a lot. And in your case, it actually came to fruition. So the positive thing, I guess, is that you are in a desk job, right? You're not on the tools every day swinging a hammer where it would have, you know, caused a lot more issue and taken a lot longer to get back to work. Because if you are in those sort of roles, then it's going to be a lot harder to get back the same time frame, right? Now, out of curiosity, and I'm sure obviously I know how much you got, and it's not huge, but it's a relatively good amount. What did you do with the money?
So I used that to put it in a revolving credit account on my mortgage. And that's something that a lot of experienced homeowners and investors utilize to reduce interest and pay down their loan faster.
So your claim effectively put money in your back pocket, ensures you pay less interest and create more opportunity to be able to reinvest that money down the line.
That's correct.
So like this insurance I know isn't there to make you or put you in a better position, right? But if it can, you want it to, right? And those aspects of things like, well, it took less than a month for everything to come through, all the notes to get done, everything to get paid out, and you're away.
Yeah, and like the team was, having an advisor on your team is just, it's really helpful, and it made me feel someone that was working for me. Because if you're speaking directly with the, because what happened was I made the claim, underwriter, is that the person assessing the claim?
The claims.
Yeah, so the claims assessor actually contacted me directly and had a conversation. And I felt like very confrontational conversation because I was getting asked a lot of questions where I didn't know how to answer. I didn't know what to say, what not to say. And that's why it was really important that I deferred the conversation to please talk to my advisor, because I knew my advisor had my best interest in mind. And I was a lot more comfortable with that conversation, you know, with leaving that conversation to my advisor.
Yeah. It's, I think it's an interesting one. And this isn't to say it's a bad thing. I feel like when you work in a team like we do and something happens to somebody in the team, all of a sudden, like your reputation, what people look at, how they look at you, what they think about you is put onto a pedestal straight away, right? Like there's a lot more pressure to make sure that, you know, we can get a claim paid for you. And like we were successful. You met all the terms and conditions, all of that. It was a relatively quick turnaround too. Yeah. But yeah, I'd agree. Like this is something we'll be talking about probably in the next podcast anyway. It's about who you need to surround yourself within your team when it comes to property purchasing and then property investing, because you do need those people in your corner all the time, right? But what I think, Ray, is that you're a pure example of a young fella who effectively has never really had any issues in the past, but one day something's going to come knocking, and ultimately that thing came knocking. And luckily, it was only a broken wrist. Now, it does show that protecting your key income was a really good option. And now the fact that you've done that already, you've had a claim paid out, it's not going to affect anything moving forward either. So look, Ray, what I want to say is thanks very much for kind of sharing your property journey, why you kind of went regional, what the Auckland property has done for you, but also opening up about the income protection, the accidental injury, and what you did with that money too. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are doing what you are doing at your age and may think that we don't need to protect ourselves. We're young, we're healthy, we're fit, but you're just an example of exactly why you sort of you need to do it. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing that story with us.
Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it.